What are we doing?
Well, Jeremy, when you're in the pound, and all you gotta do all day is wait the inevitable long walk to your death, you gotta sing to pass the time.
Yeah, little intense for a Disney film, but actually, it makes sense.
Hey, everyone!
Hey!
I'm Damien!
And I'm Jeremy! And together, we are DJ Disney!
Taking you on an epic journey through Walt Disney Studios' animated classic feature films. Today, my friends, romance is in the air. Because I am here with the lovely and luscious Jeremy Lipson, and we are just in a back alley sharing a single plate of spaghetti on a moonlit evening. Jeremy, how are you this romantic evening?
Slightly concerned. Didn't expect to be outside recording this. Never been here. This is a little...
Yeah, actually, this alley is a creepy. Little sketchy. I don't, you know, hopefully we don't get jumped in the middle of podcasting.
Yeah, also, I eat a lot, so the whole sharing a meal thing, not really my style. But I appreciate it, and I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Well, if it's not sharing a meal, Jeremy, tell everyone, because we're all dying to know, let's be face it, what is your favorite date? Your ideal date?
My favorite date, I am a food-driven person, so I would like food of some... It's true, I am driven by food.
That's what they say about dogs, very food-motivated.
That is something I have in common with dogs, it's true. Yes, there should be some sort of food element, but I do like kind of the more like adventurous kind of date. I mean, I'm not really a fan of the, going to the movie theater. That's a little boring to me, and I want to actually talk to the person.
So like spelunking.
Depends.
Skydiving.
No. 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 Well.
Bullfighting.
No. 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 A little more adventurous, like a nice like road trip. But
more adventurous.
Maybe not in a first date. Wait, it depends. I'm pretty open to.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah?
A road trip? I'm sorry. So your ideal
first date. A day trip.
Your ideal first date with a new person is to get into a car and drive somewhere for like a week?
No. Well.
I mean.
That could be fun. That's spontaneous.
Interesting. Wow.
But no, I think maybe a nice picnic or a beach trip.
My ideal date would be to be in an isolation tank. And my date is in another isolation tank right next to mine. And then we both come out of the tanks after an hour and say, you know.
Well, that sucked.
Maybe we'll meet each other in our dreams.
Hold on. What?
In the isolation
is
tank.
Is that how you and Roxy met?
Yes, that actually is how we met.
Oh, that answers so many questions.
Yep.
Huh.
What are we doing here today on this wonderful podcast? Well, I will tell you, but first, Jeremy, you must cue the epic music.
Are you sure we're doing this again?
Jeremy, we discussed this. We've already done it once.
You're right.
Just do it.
Okay. Duh.
We are just a couple of former high school drama geeks undertaking the daring challenge to rewatch all of Disney's classic animated features in chronological order, starting from the beginning. In the twilight of our lives, we shall surely look back on this venture as the pinnacle of what we have achieved in our short time on this earth. But before we get into things, we must have a brief
content
warning. Talking about horny dogs today, people.
Guys, these dogs are like super horny. I mean, it makes sense because dogs are horny creatures, but these ones are very horny. It's kind of cute, though.
It is actually adorable.
Yeah. You know what? This is a better love story than half the heterosexual human tales that we hear about now.
Exactly. Just the heterosexual ones.
The gay ones are pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Last time, we talked about a real classic film, Peter Pan.
Peter Pan!
I thought that was one of the better ones we'd seen since Bambi, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it literally topped our list except for Bambi.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was fun.
We figured out that apparently Neverland is a metaphor for childhood, which I don't know if you knew that, Jeremy, but we kind of figured that out by talking it through on the podcast.
Yeah.
If you remember. It's a subtle metaphor, but it's there. Anyway, let us talk about the movie that we are watching this time around.
Can I actually interrupt you?
Yes.
Because speaking
of... I wish you would, Jeremy.
Sorry.
That's all I want.
Well, speaking about Peter Pan really quickly, after we had watched the stunning film, I went ahead and watched the sequel, Return to Neverland.
You didn't.
I
did.
And it was fun. It was really cute. It was it was actually released in theaters, which I had no idea.
Really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
That totally takes down the entire, you know, direct-to-video, you know, reputation of these
exactly.
sequels.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I really loved the music by Jonathan Brooke, who is a singer-songwriter. She's wonderful. The song I'll Try, y'all gotta hear it. It's wonderful. They just went a very interesting direction with it, and it was quite entertaining. But there's a bit of a hook element, you could say. Kind of like revisiting it.
Pun intended.
No, I meant the movie. But yeah, that's true too.
Well, Jeremy, as usual, going above and beyond and actually watching the sequels that only 30% of the population sees.
I try.
But today we are talking about just a delightful, heartwarming tale. Guys, it's Lady and the Tramp.
Lady and the Tramp. Get it? Because they have tails.
Yes. Their little tails wag. And I'll tell you something, Jeremy. If I had a tail, it would have been wagging throughout this whole film. That's all I can
say. Funny.
Yeah. Dog humor. Aww. Okay. Let's do a little table setting here. We are halfway through the 1950s. And I have to say, after the difficult times we went through in the 40s, Disney is solidly thriving.
They're on a roll.
They're on a roll, people. Mm-hmm. Peter Pan was their last film. And in 1955, we get this amazing tale. But the seed of the idea for this tale, like with many Disney films, actually dates back much further. And it begins with an artist who works for Disney named Joe Grant, who had an English Springer Spaniel, which he named Lady.
Hmm.
And he thought that the antics of his dog reacting to the arrival of his new baby were so captivating and interesting that he thought it would make a great story. And so he offered a few pitches, a few kind of treatments to Walt, of Walt Disney fame.
Oh, okay, him.
Yeah, that Walt. Mm. Who initially found them a little too sweet, a little too cloying.
Yeah, like, is this going to really work as a full-length film?
But then he found that missing piece. And that happened when he read a short story called Happy Dan, the Cynical Dog, in Cosmopolitan Magazine, which was written by a man named Ward Green. And he thought, oh, what this story needs is a little spice, a little something.
Ooh, a little romance.
Perhaps Lady should fall in love with a character like this Happy Dan, the Cynical Dog.
Was he happy or was he cynical? Was he both? I'm confused.
You know, I'm a horrible podcaster, so I didn't do the research and actually read the
article. You didn't read the book or whatever? What?
But I'm gathering from the title and from the eventual character in the film that maybe Happy Dan was a sort of sarcastic moniker. Like, he really was cynical. Although I have to say the character in the film is pretty happy.
It's true.
Wow,
maybe
guys.
It's like happy, like in
How do we
Marvel?
Reconcile happy and cynical? This is destroying my brain.
I don't know.
There was some drama that unfolded.
Ooh, drama.
A tale of backstabbing and intrigue worthy of HBO.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, maybe HBO will do a miniseries on the making of Lady and the Tramp.
Oh, I would totally watch that. Wouldn't you guys?
That would really be in line with HBO's programming. Basically, Grant, who had the original idea and had already created a bunch of storyboards that he showed to Walt, he left the studio in 1949. However, Walt used those same storyboards that he left behind in conjunction with Green's short story to eventually create the film that we all know and love. And Green, who wrote the original story about Happy Dan, right, the dog whose name we can't figure out.
It's all based on,
He wrote a novelization of the film, which Walt insisted be released before the film was released. Hmm. So because this novelization had been released, that meant that Joe Grant was never credited for his role in creating the story. They basically pretended it had all come from this novel that was actually only written and released after the film was already made. Okay. See, it's a twisty tale.
It is.
It's
drama.
A twisty tale. God. Anyway, there's apparently a little behind-the-scenes vignette that goes into all this in the Lady and the Tramp Platinum Edition.
And this little vignette is not on Disney Plus. I already checked. So if someone has the Platinum Edition, please let us know. Write to us. Text, email, carrier pigeon, whatever, horse-drawn carriage, you know, either way.
Raven, perhaps? Carrier pigeon?
Ooh, yeah, we're coming into
Just don't use the pigeons from the film, because they are way too hoity-toity.
Yeah, they're a little judgmental.
Bothered with... Those pigeons have never done a day's work in their life.
They were pretty affronted.
They never carried a letter to anywhere.
No.
Freaking upscale privileged pigeons. The critical reception of the film was relatively divisive. A lot of critics felt that it was too sweet and corny. So I guess Walt's initial misgivings about the story ended up bearing out in some ways. I thought as I was reading this, because I feel like this is something that comes up with a lot of Disney films, and it's surprising to me that people back then, in the days when these films were being released, like 1950s, I feel like we kind of look back on the 1950s and think of it as a pretty corny time. And yet, apparently, people back then were, like, not into things being too corny.
Right. I don't know. I think I could totally be wrong because I'm ignorant on this subject, but I feel like people did go to the theaters back in the day for, like, action, adventure, entertainment, like, mystery, like, kind of those sort of genres. So I do feel like that, you know, I mean, animation, like, cute, sweet, might not be their style.
Let's get into some fun facts.
Okay.
This was the first film to be filmed on CinemaScope, and that means that animators had to change basically everything about how they used space, did layouts for the scenes. It sounds like a lot of work.
Yes.
The town at the beginning of the film, where it all takes place, was visually inspired by Walt's hometown of Marceline, Missouri.
Ooh, have you been?
Yeah, yeah. I go every summer with my family.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, good.
Have you been?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I'd loved, well, in a way, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, based on the film, it looks lovely, but I don't know. Ladies owners in the film are called Jim Deere and Darling, which I thought was pretty clever, which is to reflect ladies' perspective of being a dog, because that's what she hears them refer to each other as.
Yeah, silly me when watching the film, like, just realized when I was watching with Damien now, like, wait, so are their name? That's a weird name, like Darling and Jim Deere. It's like Peter Pan, but Darling.
You were like, so her name's, you thought Deere was his last name. Yeah. So you were like, so the wife's name is Darling Deere? That's an interesting name.
And then I realized, oh, that's like what they call each other in the home. So that's what Lady thinks their names are. That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll get into it more, but I think one of the real strengths of the film is how it holds the dog's perspective.
Yes. Both
visually and with little details like
exactly.
That. So the really adorable scene in the beginning with Lady in a little hat box apparently was inspired by Walt getting his own wife a chow puppy in a hat box to make up for having forgotten a dinner date, which feels like one of those things that, who knows if that's really true. It's probably a rumor that could have gotten started somewhere.
That's pretty shitty. Why did he forget the date? What, he just like...
I was like, oh, yeah, sorry. Well, this is what I'm saying. I feel like I don't want to condemn him knowing that it couldn't be true or not true.
But why would he admit that? It's pretty sad, though, if he left her at the restaurant.
Maybe it was a Italian meal that he stood her up at.
So she was forced to only have one plate of spaghetti.
And she had nobody to slurp the spaghetti with until their mouths touched.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
Speaking of that famous spaghetti eating scene, probably the most famous scene from this film, Disney almost cut it because he thought that dogs eating spaghetti would be too silly.
Gay gasp. That was more of a heterosexual exhale, but good job.
I guess I can't help it. What can I say? A heroic animator, a true hero in the annals of history, named Frank Thomas. I put his name in because we need to know. Everyone needs to know what Hank did for us and for American cinema.
Is it Hank or Frank?
You, Frank. Just checking. As I'm praising him, I'm everyone just getting his name wrong. But anyway, he saved the spaghetti scene. And apparently he animated the entire scene himself without any layouts just to prove to Walt how cool of a scene it was, which impressed Walt, and so they kept it in.
Go Frank/Hank.
We love you, Hank. Frank. Disney himself insisted on the name Tramp, which his colleagues thought might be a little too risque.
I was actually surprised at that, too. I was like, that is a little scandalous in a way.
So the people in the 50s think this film is too corny, but they're scandalized by the word tramp. Yeah. So
it's a weird time.
You do the math on that.
A lot of weird things happening.
All right. My last fun fact was that the live-action dog model for Tramp was a female dog that an animator found at a local pound who apparently was about to be put down, like, the next day or something.
Jeez.
And Disney adopted the dog, Disney the company. And apparently she lived in a private area behind Disneyland.
That's so cool and sad. But heartwarming at the same time.
Not unlike this film. But speaking of Disneyland, ooh, Jeremy, nice transitions. Our resident expert, have you seen the dog? Or I guess at this point it would be the ghost of the dog who lived outside Disneyland when you've been there on the many times that you've gone?
Well, I was backstage once, or maybe twice, I forget, when we marched down the parade in marching band. I didn't see any dog ghosts, but that would have been cool. But the Main Street USA part of Disneyland, which is the opening entryway that looks like a little town, was actually inspired by the same town that inspired Lady and the Tramp's town of Marceline, Missouri. I know. It's shocking. The only other reference to Lady and the Tramp, besides the music that plays in the park, is at Disney World, where there's Tony's Town Square restaurant in Magic Kingdom, which is kind of in reference to the main Italian restaurant in the film that hosts the spaghetti meal, Tony's. And right in front of the restaurant in the park, kind of off to the side, there's a little etching of a heart and paw prints that is seen very quickly in the film by both Lady and Tramp. So a little reference there.
Oh my God. We need to go there one of these days, Jeremy, and get a meal at Tony's.
Yes.
And take a picture.
And you know what we can do? We can ask, can we do this like in the movie? Like, can we just not sit at a table? Can we, you know, just get a box next to like the back kitchen?
I think it was like a barrel. With something
a barrel,
on top
yeah.
Of it.
Like,
yeah.
Are we able to do that? Because we're the famous podcasters. Like, give yeah. us the exclusive. Uh-huh. Hopefully they'll let us do that.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to fund that, we're going to send a GoFundMe link in the description. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to do that.
Jeremy, I'm yes. going to tell you about my origin story with this Disney classic, because I think of all the ones we've covered so far, this is probably the one I watched the most as a kid, actually.
Really?
Of the ones we've seen so far.
Ooh.
I remember my mom really liking it. I feel like she kind of introduced it to me. Like, this was her Disney film that she was like, this was such a great classic that I loved.
Yeah.
You should watch this.
Hmm.
And I was totally enamored by it. And I think looking back that it was a sign from early on that I was just super into romance.
Mm.
And I still am super into romance
yeah.
and rom-coms. And I recognized the germs of that wonderful genre in this film.
Good for you. I actually have a similar yet completely opposite origin story
okay.
of this film. I'm going to blow your mind, Damien. The first time I had seen this movie was 2 years ago.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, no. This was one of like maybe five classic Disney films that I just hadn't seen yet. And then when lockdown happened, I was like, I need to watch these. And so I watched it on Disney Plus.
Incredible.
I know. And so I loved it. And I think what I first knew of the film before that, I just thought it was like this sweet story about Tramp being like a terrible person or dog. And then Lady being like really stuck up. Because that's what they looked like to me, like in the poster or whatever. And then I knew that he's a Tramp song, and that's like just all I knew.
Wow.
Until 2 years ago.
And then
isn't that
your
crazy?
Whole world was changed.
Yeah, I was like, I'm so glad that I'm able to see this film. It's very sweet.
So is this the most recent of the classic Disney films that you got to in your life? Like, was it the latest
well,
one?
Well, those five, yeah. I mean, I watched them all like the same week.
Wait, sorry, which five?
Well, I won't share which five.
Oh,
because so
we'll get to them later.
Spoil it. Mm. But there are, you know, five of like the classic ones that is just shocking that I hadn't seen them yet.
Amazing. I'm shocked. Let's recap the plot here, and we're going to turn it over to our trusty Jeremy, who spent 4 years getting an advanced degree in recapulous recapping. So let's show the people what you learned, Jeremy.
Yep, thank you. Thank you for calling me trusty, because that is also a character name in the film. Kind of crazy foreshadowing there. So in the year of 1909, by the way, this is a total Christmas film. It ends up opening on a Christmas, Christmas film. Christmas background with Jim, Deere, and Darling, who we never really know the names of. And we're also like, wait a second, are we going to see your faces? Okay, we kind of do really quickly. Anyway, so they're a nice little couple that lives in this sweet little town. And he's like, yo, I apparently missed a dinner date, so I'm going to get you a dog. Yay. And then he's like, yeah, I know exactly what to do. We're going to trap it in the kitchen and not let it sleep with us, and it's going to bark a lot, but we're just going to ignore it because now we're dog owners, so we know what we're doing. And that does not work out well. Lady's like, hell no, I want to sleep with y'all. You're awesome.
It's really the story of every dog owner. You start right. with all of these great intentions of how you're going to lay down the law and create structure, and within literally a single day, it all goes out the window, as we see.
They run the whole house. So anyway, Lady grows up miraculously overnight. It turns into 6 months later. It's amazing. And we realize that she has some friends next door in her little, like, kind of posh neighborhood. Jock, who is this, like, Scottish terrier, right? Okay, I'm more of a cat person. And then Trusty, who can't sniff for shit.
They make it easy by giving the dogs the accent that corresponds with the breed of the dog.
Right. So he's a bloodhound who are famous for sniffing, and he can't sniff. Or can he? But we'll get to that later. So then switching gears a little bit on the other side of the tracks. Literally.
Oh, the wrong side of the tracks.
Ooh, we have Tramp, who is a mutt who just loves his reckless life. And he does. He gets, you know, different meals at different restaurants every day. It's amazing. He saves his friends from the pound. They're like, oh my God, thanks. And then we go back to Lady, who's like, oh my God, like, my owners, like, hate me. Like, what's happening? And then they're like, oh no, shit. Like, a baby is coming. That's why. And she's like, oh my God, what's a baby?
That's exactly what she sounds like.
Like, literally. And then Tramp comes along and is like, hey, Lady. And she's like,
Pigeon. I don't know why he still calls her Pigeon, but
yeah, he calls her Pigeon because I think pigeons are like the first thing he sees in this little neighborhood. Anyway, so he's like, yeah, no, babies suck. They're like the worst. And Lady's like, oh no, I'm gonna be forgotten about. So anyway, the parents like have this baby and they're like, you know what the best thing to do after having a baby is to leave. Let's go on a vacation.
Exactly.
Like, what is, I don't know what that was about. And they decide to leave before like the sitter comes in. They're like, well, let's go. And thank God the sitter shows up before they leave, right? Because they're just gonna,
we're not sure when Aunt Sarah's showing up, but we'll definitely just leave
Aunt
our
Sarah.
Newborn alone.
Okay, I have a lot to say about Aunt Sarah. She's the worst Disney character in the world. She sucks ass and not well. And she, yep, you heard me. And she's like, oh, I'm here to take care of a baby and a dog, except I hate dogs, so why am I here? Ugh. Guys, Aunt Sarah's the real villain of the story. So Aunt Sarah's like, I'm here and I'm going to take care of this baby. Oh no, what are you doing? A dog can't be in the house. So stupid. And then she has her little like racist cats, Cy and Am. They're Siamese cats, get it? And they're like, we're cats, but you know, this is a dog movie, so we're going to be evil. And they destroy everything.
That is definitely the logic.
That's literally what happens. And then she's like, no, like you're trying to be rude to the baby. And Aunt Sarah's like, uh-uh, these are my cats, so get out of the house. And what the hell? And so then Aunt Sarah gets Lady a muzzle, and it's rude. And Lady clearly is frantic and panics and escapes and encounters vehicles of all kinds in the streets.
Every vehicle that was ever invented at this time period, she encounters within the space of 30 seconds.
It's amazing. And then Tramp saves her because she runs amok with these carnivorous dogs. And he's like, let me show you the side of town.
As opposed to the vegetarian dogs that we all know and love.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, you know what the best place to get a muzzle off is? The zoo, because you can find all animals who can help. They try an alligator, which does not work out, clearly, because that's a little dangerous. They encounter a beaver, and this is actually a wonderful scene, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, they manage to kind of bargain this beaver to rip the muzzle off this lady dog, because he's like, this can help me move my wood or log, whatever the terminology would be. Anyways, so after that, Lady gets accidentally taken by the pound because they're running amok with chickens or something like that. And then she ends up in this terrible place where dogs are not treated well, and it's very sad. And there's dogs of all stereotypes and cultures there. And then there's this lovely lady, Peg, who's like, let's slut shame Tramp. And then they talk about Tramp's past girlfriends in song. And then Lady has a license, which I guess is like the, you know, the equivalent to like a chip, which you hear about modern day. And so she gets taken back to her family, which all these poor little puppies don't have. It's very, very sad.
Up until that point, though, it's very unclear what this license is about. She gets it at the beginning of the film and she's like, oh, we've got to get you a license, lady.
I was asking Damien, I was like, what the hell is a license? And he's just like not answering. I'm like, what is it? Anyway, so then they go back home and Sarah's still in charge. Like, they went on a really long vacation because they hate the baby. I don't know. And then so poor lady has been demoted to the outdoor doghouse. It's very sad. On a leash. She can't do anything. Does she even get fed? I don't know. So then she's like, oh, and then Tramp comes over to like apologize, kind of. But she's like, no, like, you suck. How dare you? Oh my God, did I forget about their date?
I was like, goodness, I was waiting for you to finish and then be like, that was great, Jeremy, except for the most famous scene, their incredibly adorable date.
Because we talked about it. No, they went on a date like before she got taken to the pound, and they went to Tony's, and they had Italian, they shared the meal, spaghetti and meatball. Everybody knows this, that's why I didn't talk about it.
Then they went up to the little hill where all the people take their horse-drawn carriages to go make out.
And then the horses disappear. They're just carriages. I don't know why, but anyways, that's another thing.
Anyway.
So he goes to apologize, and she's like, no. But then a rat who is just seeking refuge from the rain but is animated very, very ugly and evilly sneaks into the house, and lady's like, oh, hell no. And then Tramp's like, I'll get the rat. And then Sarah freaks out because she sucks, and she thinks that Tramp is just being rude to the baby, and lady is amazing and is like, I love this baby. And then I don't know why I said it like that. And then rips the leash and goes upstairs, and the rat gets killed, which is very sad. And the baby's crib, like, topples over. And then they're so proud. Like, Sarah comes in and is like, what's happening? They're like, look, like, we almost killed the baby. And then she's like, yeah. And then she calls the pound. And then Tramp gets taken. And then just, it's amazing movie magic timing. Finally, Darling and Jim Deere come, who's not a deer, it's a human, comes back to the home. And they're like, what is happening? And Sarah was like, lady's a terrible dog. And they're like, no, you're a terrible person. So they race after the pound carriage thing. Meanwhile, Jock and Trusty are following the path, and Trusty's learning, like, yeah, I can actually sniff. And Jock is shocked, and they finally get there, and Trusty is barking at the horses who are actually pulling the carriage this time, and then they stop the thing, and then Trusty basically dies, except he doesn't. It's very, very sad, and it's very rude how Disney did this, and we think that a dog actually dies in the film. And then we just, like, transition into Christmas again, where Tramp has been adopted into the family. They have babies that are not breed. It's very weird. They basically look like Lady or Tramp, who are different dog breeds, as opposed to, like, you know, a mixture.
I think that's how genetics work.
Mm-hmm. And then we learn that Trusty did not actually die. He just has a broken leg. Very Psych. Nice. And then we learn that there is a slight redemption arc for Sarah, as she has now sent them doggy biscuits for Christmas. And that's the end. Yay. Thank you. That was 4 years of training.
Incredible. Well worth all of the student loans.
Yeah. You know what it ends with, though? There's this ongoing joke in the film where Trusty is like, well, my grandfather, old reliable, always said, and then he gets interrupted. And then finally at the end, he's telling, like, the puppies, and they don't interrupt him. And he's like, oh no, what did he say? I don't remember. It's funny.
That was beautiful, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The plot in this film is, it feels less central than in some films. You know, there's a plot for sure, but it's, you know, it's really just a romance, and it's about the characters and their relationships. But justice for the rat, let me just say that. We'll talk about it more.
Don't even get me started.
The rat is misunderstood, people. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about what our impressions were after watching it tonight, which we just did. You for the second time, Jeremy. How did it hold up after 2 years?
It held up quite well. I was mostly watching it through the similar lens that I initially watched it, and it's just a solid Disney film, I thought. It's just well done and very sweet and just an entertaining watch throughout.
I found myself really won over by this movie, and I think what it was is kind of what I was saying before, is that the more I watched it on this go around, I was like, this is such a rom-com. It's a true rom-com.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of rare for a Disney film, despite the fact that so many of them are centered around romance.
Mm-hmm.
the romance is not usually the actual arc of the story. The story is something else, like, I don't know, like Ariel becoming a human, mm-hmm. or, you know, Prince Ali going on all these adventures, and then in the end they get together and have a kiss or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this was actually like a real traditional romance rom-com movie where they are on opposite sides at mm-hmm. the beginning. They're like from different worlds, don't like each other. They come around, they have this beautiful experience, then they like have their fight, right? There's always the fight that happens mm-hmm. in the rom-com, and then they have the redemption at the end. And it was like, and as a rom-com, it was incredibly effective, which I was just impressed by, probably from living through our current era, which is like a terrible desert of good rom-coms. It's like people have forgotten how to make good rom-coms. And so when I saw this and was reminded of all the beauties of this genre, I was like, this is so great.
I don't even know the last time I saw like a recent rom-com, but yeah. I agree.
I could go on for hours about this, but Netflix has basically become an evil corporate factory. Ooh. Where they're just like, we know that people will watch these rom-coms, so we're just going to churn them out without putting any sort of effort into them whatsoever. No budget, no good acting,
What's
no good
writing.
What's
your least favorite rom-com?
I can't even... There was some one that came out recently about this girl who meets someone on the internet, but he uses a different picture. And so when she goes to meet him...
Wait, that was funny. What was that called?
Well, no, it had some moments,
sure. It was enjoyable. It was like that Christmas one, right?
It was a Christmassy one.
And he likes candles.
Yeah. That one had some moments, but like every time I go into it, I keep thinking like, oh, this is going to be, you know, the next cool, great new rom-com. And every time, my heart is broken.
It was an interesting premise. I mean, look, the thing is, there's not many ways to do something differently anymore.
Yeah.
So they're trying to come up with, like, different premises, and, you know.
It's possible that as a culture, we've moved past the point where we can do rom-coms the way we used to. And, you know, maybe they'll become a beautiful artifact of the past, not unlike classical music, which we can still enjoy today. I don't know. But I was really... blown away by that on this rewatch, of just like that this movie really is a true rom-com, and despite being about dogs, it's better than most rom-coms out there with humans. Let's be real. And the dog aspect actually is pretty cute.
Yeah.
Let's talk about for a sec the cultural impact of this film. I mean, something that I thought about was that it feels like, of the films we've seen so far at Disney, it's like one of the first kind of almost contemporary feeling films, which is weird because I was surprised to find out it takes place in 1909,
right?
Because I'd always assumed it was kind of current, but no, it doesn't take place in the 50s.
Well, I mean, it features like more modern, you know, paved streets and like, you know, people from this
kind
of time period, the last century. So I don't think we've seen that in a film that we've really watched. I mean, maybe a little bit in Peter Pan, but that was also, it seemed a little more, you know, fantastical, obviously, with Neverland. So here you're kind of ground in reality. And speaking of iconic imagery, I mean, we've talked about this already, but the single plate of spaghetti with the meatball, with sharing the, you know, the string of spaghetti, that has surpassed, like, Disney imagery and has really gone on kind of what you were saying about, like, just romance imagery.
It's true. I think you're absolutely right that it surpassed Disney to become just equivalent to romance in our culture. If you were doing a little improv scene in a class and it was like show romance, you know, with one little moment, you know, you could do the spaghetti scene. It's just like, it's become so iconic for sure.
Yeah.
That's kind of the main thing though, in terms of what's lasted mm-hmm. from the film. I can't really think of anything else that's...
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else in the film. I will, however, say that also in that scene, the song Bella Notte has even become like a wedding song. It's kind of also coupled with the spaghetti plate and has really also gone on to become like a romance classic in some ways.
I was at a wedding recently where the wedding song... Yeah, Hank was there. Hank/Frank was there. The wedding song was a instrumental version of the Bear, and the Maiden Fair from Game of Thrones, which...
What?
My point is that pretty much anything can be a wedding song nowadays, so I'm not surprised that this song is a wedding song. For sure.
I will also say that I knew that song as a kid, didn't know it was from the film until like a few years ago. I just knew it as like, I thought it was like this like Italian standard or something.
It does have that feeling. And I think that the film does that too, where it sort of plays with, we'll get into this more with music later on, but the music feels more contemporary too in some ways, along with the environment, which I think you made a really great point, which is that we are in the world of an urban setting, which is new to this point in the Disney films we've covered. We're also in a world that's not fantastical, which is the first film we've covered so far, apart from Bambi, where that's been the case.
Right.
So both animal films. But yeah, it just feels really different to get to be on these paved streets with cars zooming by and, you know, the rhythm of modern daily life. Even if it is 1909, it still has all of the seeds of like what we think of modern daily life, really.
Yeah.
You know, there's a phone that they take out of the wall, kind of like a cell phone.
Not quite, but almost. There is a receiver and there's like handheld. There's like two different parts to it. I mean, I was like, if children watch this today, would they even know like what these characters are doing?
No.
What?
100% no.
No.
They have no clue. So let's, before we take our break, talk a little bit. We always got to. You can't not talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's just say that it'll be really interesting to see the next film we cover that doesn't have one of those warnings at the beginning that says, like, this film contains inappropriate, insensitive portrayals. We, you know, they are wrong.
I'm trying to think, have we had a movie that hasn't had some sort of discussion point about this?
I don't know. I think it was Bambi, actually, that we covered, where we were kind of like, I think...
There's nothing
here. I mean, it's just animals in the forest. We think it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone somewhere will come back and say Bambi's super problematic. But anyway...
I don't know.
there certainly are some problematic aspects to cover in this film.
Really?
Unfortunately. Yeah. Well, specifically two, I'd say. Two main ones. And
yes.
Named Cy and Am.
Ooh, yeah. It's just a bit of a cringy characterization, I'll say.
It's very cringy, actually. Yeah. It's pretty hard to watch and listen to from our modern kind of sensitization to these things, because it's like a really incredibly generic and insensitive like Asian accent that isn't really even specific at all.
Well, here's the thing. Most of the dogs are really like a stereotype of the country that they're from.
Right.
And then Cy and Am get a whole song, so you kind of get more of that stereotype. And it's, you know, you have the bad accent that is voiced by Peggy Lee, a famous jazz singer. And it's very interesting. And just the lyrics are, like, in broken English.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
They, like, I think part of it was just how heavily they leaned into it. Like, the English is broken, the accents are really intense and bad. And like you said, a lot of the dogs have stereotyped accents because they're kind of going off of the whole breed thing to give them their accent.
Right.
But many of them are European in origin, and it just feels different to have, like, a stereotype of a non-marginalized group represented, you know.
Yeah, there's also the Chihuahua named Pedro who speaks with a Mexican accent, and that's like kind of his only personality trait, just kind of like jokes on that culture a little bit.
Right, right. And that's the other aspect of the Siamese cats who, like you said, get a whole song. Mm-hmm. It's not just their accent and everything. It's the way that they're animated is like pretty clearly referencing stereotypical imagery of like Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
The type of music is sort of a parody of using that type of music for the song.
You could also argue though that, you know, Trusty, who's kind of like from the South. I mean, I think a stereotype of that is like, you know, dim-witted and lacking memory, and you know, he gets that treatment too.
This is true. So, you know, we should sort of share the wealth around a little bit and say that, you know, stereotypes in general are a big part of this film, and some of that maybe isn't the greatest. And it's just a good thing to be aware of. The only other thing that really came to my mind, I wasn't sure if you thought that clearly classism is a big theme in this film. Do you think that there was anything around that rose to the level of being like problematic, or is it just sort of a part of the film?
I don't know if it's problematic. The movie really just ends in Tramp just joining the family without any, like, indication of, oh, I miss this life, or what is this life? And there's not really any resolution regarding that aspect of even the pound. So I don't know. I don't know if it's problematic or just not completely explored.
Yeah, I mean, I did think of a little bit of, like, they're 100% hardcore romanticizing homelessness and, like, this character, like, his name is Tramp. Mm-hmm. Everyone talks about how great he is. From the moment we meet him waking up in, you know, under a bridge somewhere, he is just clearly over the moon about his life.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. He dines at all the, you know, he has his pick of the restaurants right. that he wants to dine at. And, you know, it's, there are positive things about freedom and, like, all those things are legitimate, but they didn't really delve into any, like, difficulties or, like, aspects of that experience that are hard, which mm-hmm. certainly there are. I think that's probably all of the sort of things in terms of problematic aspects. The whole Siamese thing is, you know, it's a shame because that is now become such a huge legacy that's attached to the film. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's still yeah. a delightful film.
Do you think this movie passes the Bechdel test?
Yes, the Bechdel test. Good question, Jeremy. Again, so that would be a test to apply to the film to see if there's any point at which
two female characters are having a conversation not about a man. And I don't think it passes.
I don't think this one does.
I mean, unless you count Darling and Lady, but it's not a conversation.
Okay, so they're having a conversation. I guess they have that one exchange where Darling is knitting and Lady's trying to like get her attention.
But it's also not a conversation. Lady isn't talking.
Right. It's a little bit hard to sort of apply it in the same way it is a dog and a human.
Right.
But even there, the shadow of the baby mm-hmm. who ends up being a boy, we don't know that at the time, but the shadow of the baby is very much over them in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't see a very clear...
I guess maybe Darling and Aunt Sarah are talking about Lady the dog.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think it counts.
I see what you're saying there. I'd say it gets it definitely doesn't get like an A+, 100% passing grade.
We get close with Peg and Lady having a moment, but they're also talking about Tramp.
Oh, yeah. Peg is obsessed with Tramp. That's her whole character is how much she's obsessed with Tramp.
Yeah.
Well, this is why we have this test, to sort of expose these somewhat problematic but very normalized
I actually am going to disagree with you. I don't think... I'll talk about it later, but I don't think Peg's characterization is correct there. But anyway.
A little disagreement, a little repartee.
Ooh, taking it back to Cinderella.
Well, we'll have to get into it then, but first, we'll take a short break.
Damien, that's my frickin' spaghetti!
I'm sorry, I thought it would be romantic.
No, I thought you were gonna eat the meatball.
I'm sorry.
Oh my god, why is this happening?
We clearly have some relationship issues to work out, but...
Some.
You know what? I thought it would be romantic, Jeremy, so whatever. It's fine. No, it's fine. Okay. Let's just... Yeah,
okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
Good segue, though, into...
It's amazing.
Talking about how horny is this movie. I said we'd be talking about horny dogs.
You know, I wouldn't say it's that horny. I think there are some horny moments, but I think it's just a little more subtle in comparison to past Disney films, which is shocking.
Which is interesting because of how much the romance is emphasized in this film and how much you could say that it is a full-on romance film.
Mm-hmm.
It actually is less horny than, like, you know, Pinocchio, which is ostensibly an adventure film.
Yeah, I mean, like we did mention earlier, there is some talk about Tramp's kind of flirtatious sex life a little bit.
That's
kind of
true.
Sung by a very flirtatious dog.
Trixie and Vixen. Now I'm just saying reindeer. I don't know. But it's revealed that he's had a string of past lovers.
Yeah.
One fun fact I came across was that there was supposed to be a love triangle between Tramp, Lady, and the Russian wolfhound Boris.
Well, this would have been actually really groundbreaking for, you know, gay relationships also back in the day.
That's true. I mean, a love triangle doesn't have to mean... It could mean that they're both into Lady.
Oh, you meant... Oh, well, never mind. I'm just disappointed.
But it could also mean that they're all into each other, including Tramp and Boris.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised that was even considered. I feel like I can't even imagine a Disney film tackling something that, like, complex.
I can see it. Really? I can see it, like, in The Pound. And she's like, well, Tramp, let me go, or whatever. And then Boris is like, well, I'll get us out of here.
I will say, while it's not the most horny of films, there is a lot of Lady, she really... It's very demure, you know? She kind of, like, has those long lashes, and she's always sort of looking away from Tramp when he does something romantic and kind of like, oh, Tramp, stop, please.
Oh, like, with those eyes. I remember before I had seen the film, I had thought that Lady was going to sound younger than she does. She kind of sounds like an old lady. And I thought, sorry.
I don't know about that.
Well, a little bit. I mean, old style lady, I don't know. And then I thought that Tramp would kind of sound a little more like... manly in a way.
I actually had a similar feeling when I heard Tramp's voice. It's been so long, I kind of forgot.
He sounded very young.
He is almost sort of boyish, and he's very chipper. I mean, yeah, her voice is a little bit more mature, I would describe. Yes. I would describe it as mature, and it's even a little bit sort of...
She old! No.
sultry and raspy. Yes. You know, it's a little sexy.
Okay.
You know. You know.
Well, speaking of, who would you get with in this film, Damien? Would you get with that sexy voice? Ooh.
Look, we know from my beloved Cleo.
Yes, you do not shy away from the animals,
that
which is
I
fine.
I have no compunction about, you know, animals in Disney films. And, I mean, let's be real. They're blatantly trying to make Lady very appealing. And they succeed. I mean, they use the ears as, like, long, curly hair, and the eyelashes, and the eyebrows are very, you know, nicely plucked. She had a sort of a Spanish vibe to me. I don't know. I don't know why I was getting that.
Interesting.
Like a spicy Spanish lady.
Wow. I didn't expect this, but cool. Whatever floats your boat.
You know, with the big doe eyes.
Okay, is that your answer?
That is my answer, okay? You're going to make me say it. I feel like Peg she's supposed to be kind of sexy, obviously, in the way that she's...
Well, she's kind of been through it, you know?
Right,
she's
also has, like, a slightly, like, off-her-rocker vibe, where, like, I feel like she could sort of snap at any moment, so...
No, I don't think so.
But I think Lady, I mean, I'll use the word appealing. I think Lady is very appealing. She's got the voice. Mm-hmm. She's all sort of demure. But then she also isn't just like a rug. She stands up for herself when Tramp mistreats her, which he does, and has a lame-ass apology of like, oh, sorry, I didn't even come to try to get you, but we're all good now, right? And she's like, no, and by the way, who's Trixie?
I mean... I think Tramp has the right to have past girlfriends, and also they did not define the relationship. They knew each other for like a day, so I think you should give him some slack.
Jeremy, during the film, you know, just threw up his hands and was like, they didn't define the relationship.
They didn't. They didn't have a conversation. They go on one date, and it's like, oh my god, you've been with other, like, dogs?
Yeah.
Come on.
I feel like straight people are always falling into that ditch. Like, they never define the relationship.
Talk about it. Communicate. Come on.
It's because they think the relationship is already defined because of societal scripts.
No, you
have
to talk
about
it. See, that's the thing. And we don't have a societal script because, well, anyway.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, so who would I get with? I'm not going to pick Tramp, but I can... His reckless personality is kind of fun. But no, I guess I'd pick Jim Deere. I mean, when Darling was like, I need... What did she need? Like watermelon?
Watermelon and chop suey? Whatever that is.
It's like a blizzard outside, and he's like, okay, what did you want? Okay, I'll get it for you. Like, that is a devoted husband, and just because of that, we only saw his face like once. I'm like, sure. You know, and he's the whole reason that this film happened. He got a dog. So that gives you some props.
He got a dog, and he got Darling pregnant, so he was responsible for all of the major plot points.
Yeah, well, I mean, they both got her pregnant. But yes, there's two people involved.
Let's derail into a debate about how this all works. No. Let's not. Instead, let's talk about our favorite scene.
Ooh.
Which I feel like is almost an unfair question because it has to be the dinner scene. I mean, it's so incredibly iconic. Can you even think of another one that would be in the running? I mean, I feel like I can think of a second place one, but I'm not even going to touch the sanctity of the dinner scene.
What is my favorite scene? You know what? Actually, yes, I do know my favorite scene, and it's not the dinner scene. My favorite scene, I think it was the most clever and comedic scene, was with the beaver when they're like auctioning off this muzzle, and it's so funny. Like, well, you should get this muzzle for only $6, you know? Or they're just really talking like an auctioneer or like a commercial. It's really, really well done, and it's very entertaining, and it's so random. It's
the beaver
very
has a pretty delightful lisp where he like whistles.
Oh, funny.
I can't do it. But no. He whistles when he talks.
Yes.
I'm shocked though, because I mean, it's a cute scene, yes, but you're gonna pick a scene that's like not even consequential to the, like, no,
well,
none
here's
of
why
the romance
I'm picking that
scenes,
scene is because I already knew the dinner scene from like 20 plus years of never seeing the film. I already was familiar with that scene. It wasn't like, oh my god, I'm shocked that this is happening, or wow, this is such a cool scene to see. It's like I already knew it was coming.
I felt the opposite. I felt like, even though it's such an iconic scene that you already know, It was still, like, as I was watching it, I was like, this is iconic for a reason. This is so adorable. I mean, I'm sorry.
I fully agree.
Like, these two Italian men who basically see this stray and are like, oh my god, he's got a friend now. We're going to pull out all the stops, and we're going to serve them a spaghetti dinner, and we're going to play music for them, and we're going to, like, facilitate this whole romantic date for these two dogs. It's so cute.
It's very cute, and I do not deny that. However, I will always choose the more underrated scene, and that doesn't take away my love for the dinner scene, which, by the way, we forgot to mention, but I think the Italian men are also stereotypically characterized.
Yeah. Like, I mean, has there ever been an Italian in a Disney film that wasn't that? I don't know.
I know, that's true.
But even so, I just found it so incredibly winning. I will say my second place pick was the epic scene at the end when Tramp is getting taken away to the pound. He's finally been caught, as Peg warned he would be if he ever did fall in love, and it came true. He let his guard down because he was trying to help out Lady, and he ended up getting caught.
I also love that the scene right after, because it's like the vindication of, you know, the owners come home and they're like, no, 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 Lady is not like that. She would not have, like, disrupted the baby. Like, something is wrong. And they're like,
Jeremy just needed some adult to come in tell off Aunt Sarah.
I hate Aunt Sarah so much. She's the worst. And we'll get into that soon.
No, but getting back to the scene, it's so beautiful. I actually started tearing up Trusty and Jock run after, they're like,
it was so sweet.
It's because, and this is what really sets this film apart, is that it's not just cutesy, it has actual character development that's really effective, because Jock and Trusty start out by really not trusting Tramp, because duh, he's on the wrong side of the tracks. They're upper class dogs, but when they find out about the rat, they're like, Jock has that great line where he's like, I misjudged him terribly.
It was so sweet. And then they run to save him. And I was kind of, I was tearing up a little
bit. And they
set
up at the beginning that Trusty's lost his sense of smell, but then he's still trying to go after the carriage and scent it out. And Jock's like, listen, we both know you can't smell. This is hopeless. And then Trusty just looks at him and he's like, no, I found the smell. And then he starts howling and going after the carriage. And it's so rousing. And I think that is another really great part of any good rom-com, having some sort of rousing, like, running through the streets type of scene towards the end. That's a great rom-com.
And also having great friends, because it's all about their friendship with Lady. That's why they go after the pound carriage. Are we calling it a carriage? I don't know.
Anyway, that's my second place pick. But the dinner scene, a classic and can't be touched.
Well, sorry for picking the bloody beaver.
You're lame.
I just thought it was so out of left field, and it was very well written and funny.
No, it actually was really funny. The beaver's cool. Let's talk about the music for a sec. How would you describe the overall kind of musical vibe or style of this film?
Yeah, it is a little more contemporary feeling and a little more jazzy, especially in songs like He's a Tramp. There's more of a lullaby aspect with La La Lu, and Bella Notte has kind of that classic, you know, romance Italian vibe.
They call it Bella Notte.
There's actually quite a few different genres in this film. There's, of course, you know, the controversial Siamese Cat song, which has a little more of that what should we
controversial
call it?
Flair.
Controversial flavors, let's say. And then there's What is a Baby, which is slightly spoken word. I mean, there's just so
Jeremy
many
Jeremy got a little upset that it wasn't rhyming. He was like, no, that doesn't rhyme.
I was like, why didn't you just choose a different word? Like, come on. And then there's a Christmas song at the very end, Peace on Earth. So it's just everything.
Oh, I totally missed that.
It's like 30 seconds.
Wait, are the characters singing it? Or
no, it's like some background vocalist.
Yeah, just angels are singing it.
Yeah, someone.
Okay,
someone.
Hanging out. I agree. And I think one thing I thought about the one of the probably breakout bangers that we'll have to talk about, which is He's a Tramp.
Yeah.
Super jazzy. And to me, this feels like the first time where you have a Disney film that has a musical number that's like legitimately cool. That's like reflecting the kind of hip, cool, edgy musical styles of the time. I think up until that point, it's always something really classic.
Yeah, no, that's true. And He's a Tramp has been covered by, you know, quite a few. Well, it was also sung by Peggy Lee. So this was also kind of the first Disney film to, you know, feature like a celebrity voice.
That's
in a
not
way.
True. The voice of the guy who does Jiminy Cricket, he was a very popular
but
singer.
Like, but at least some of that I knew.
That's what makes it important.
I mean, look, Peggy Lee sang Fever, okay? That's like a really, really famous song.
Yeah, we're finally getting...
What did the crickets sing?
We're finally getting far enough in time that we're hitting, you know, famous singers that we grew up kind of knowing about and hearing about, which is cool. Peggy
Honestly.
Lee. I did also think, as much as I hate to admit it, the Siamese song is pretty catchy.
I agree.
And kind of musically inventive.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of covers. There's a very iconic cover by Hillary and Hayley Duff. There's
seriously?
Yes. Oh my god.
Wait, they covered that song?
Yeah, I know. Well, this
How
is like
did they
2004.
Get away with that?
Well, Disney enlisted them to do it as part of Disney Mania, which was this series of compilations where Radio Disney artists covered classic Disney songs, and they make it like kind of this
Jeremy's
like,
Woodstock.
Yeah, like like this electronic song, and then they like do like a kind of a pop rock element at the very end. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Bella Notte was like has been covered and like has been on Glee, and then He's a Tramp was okay, this is gonna be crazy, but He's a Tramp was a bit of my sexual awakening song.
Really?
With a cover by the Bew or the Bow sisters, whatever they were called, on Disney Mania. And this woman's voice was so sexy to me. Like, it was so seductive. And
I mean,
I was
it's
just very
definitely
into it.
Sexy in the film, too. I mean, it's clear that Peg, the dog, is like, you know, she's got the dog hair over one eye, and she's wiggling her dog butt, and she's talking about, he's a tramp. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a sexy song.
Yeah.
However you spin it, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the music's great. It's not super music heavy as Disney films go. But there's a wide variety from semi-spoken word, inner monologue songs to hip jazz numbers to classic Italian opera.
To dogs barking.
which, you know, that was the beautiful tones you heard at the start of the pod. I'm sure we did a great job.
Oh, that was
recreating that.
Yeah. Also, I'm curious how much inspiration there was for the title of this film to the classic song The Lady is a Tramp, which is from the 1930s musical Babes in Arms. That's like a popular jazz standard.
That's why the lady is a tramp.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a super famous song. I mean, basing that only on the fact that I know it now.
Yeah.
But I imagine it was famous. So calling this movie Lady and the Tramp, putting those words together like that, it feels like they had to be purposely kind of recalling something that's like already popular in the culture and sort of signaling that this is a hip, fun, you know, sexy romance.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the characters.
Okay.
And I first just want to say that having this film be about dogs was such a genius move and works so well because of the fact that dogs are, there's so many different breeds that look so different. They all have these different backgrounds. I mean, yes, it led to some stereotyping and some intense accent work, but it does also allow for a lot of characterization that's very fun and unique, which I think just adds a lot to the story.
Yeah, there's a lot of variety within the characters.
A huge amount of variety. Should we talk about the rat?
Yeah, but I want to know who's your favorite character. Who's your best? Who's the best character in your opinion?
I mean, okay. I really didn't enjoy getting to meet all the dogs in the pound. There was just so much fun characterization going on. But I think I might go with Trusty.
Aw, Trusty.
I mean, he's got all of those great lines of like, as my pal Reliable used to say, I'm not sure if I ever mentioned old Reliable. And then everyone says, yes, you have, Rusty, many times.
Oh, that was great.
Actually,
there's no Irish dog.
No,
well, there's a Scottish.
I was trying to be Scottish.
Though. Oh, never mind.
Anyway, never mind. It was terrible.
That was great.
No, Trusty's great. I love Trusty. He's trusty. Very trustworthy.
Seriously, up till almost his death. But anyways, no, because he almost dies.
They really lean into it. They show him under the wheel of the carriage, and Jock is howling and crying over his body.
Literal tears, and then he just stops moving. And then he's dead.
Cut to Christmas, and it's everyone's really happy, and you're like, I'm sorry.
After like a full minute for Trusty to make his appearance again with like a broken leg.
And then he just limps up, and he's got like a hurt leg, and that's it. And it's like, okay, Jesus.
Well, anyways, my favorite character is Peg. I love Peg.
Okay.
I just find her so interesting, and like she could have like a whole film in my eye.
Peg is the sort of
she's the one who sings "He's a Tramp."
She's the one who sings "He's a Tramp." She's the only other like female dog we meet. She's the kind of streetwise, been through the ringer counterpart to Lady.
Yeah. And I really like that she has a moment with Lady of comforting her, where Lady's just arrived in the pound and the other dogs are kind of like, you know, teasing her a little bit, and she's like, hey, back off, she's scared, like they don't mean harm, you know, it's gonna be okay.
She definitely has a like an East Coast, I don't know if it's like New York or Long Island or some kind of affectation that's pretty fun. You know, we got to get justice for this rat, Jeremy.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Can we talk about the villains, or in quote villains? First of all, the rat. Okay. The rat is seen as terrifying right from the get-go. And the poor thing just probably wants some food. I don't know. Lady just, like, scares him for no reason. He's just trying to cross the lawn. And then in the main climax of the film, pretty much, you know, he's seen in the rain trying to get shelter, or what I perceived as trying to get shelter, and going inside the house. And Lady's like, uh-uh.
We never see the rat get close to the baby until he's been chased by Tramp all over the room. Like, he's literally just hanging out in the house.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, rats don't just attack human infants. I don't really think that's a thing. They just try to go, like, find food.
Yeah.
And Jeremy had a great observation, which is just that the rat is animated to look so evil.
Yeah.
But that's not his fault. No. I mean, you know.
Doesn't want to look like that either.
It's just really funny to just shift the whole perspective to the rat the whole time and be like, guys, stop, like, chasing me around and trying to kill me.
I'm just a rat. This is just me. This is who I am. This is all about, you know what? The rat needs a redemption arc. It's crazy.
He's deeply misunderstood. Well, except he doesn't get one because he gets killed.
I know. He's the only casualty of the film, by the way.
He is an innocent victim and casualty.
Actually, no, there's a second one.
Rat. Oh, yeah, there's that one dog.
It's off screen, but yeah.
Yeah. Aww. So we need to raise awareness against rat prejudice.
And if you can hear him, Simba is fully in support of this. He's yelling in the background.
Well, that's true. Simba, I don't know what he would do if a rat
Can we talk about Aunt Flip and Sarah?
Yeah, let's... Well, now that we've finished, like, finding justice for the quote-unquote villain of this film, let's talk about who the real villain is.
Aunt Sarah is the real villain of this movie. She's terrible. She's the worst. Oh, God. She endorses racist cats. She hates well-meaning dogs.
Yeah, no, she does just flip out unnecessarily at everything. But it's all okay because she sends dog treats
no,
at the
she,
end.
No, and then she also sends Tramp to the pound and puts Lady in a muzzle. No, she's just the worst. And then she's like, oh, I'll send dog biscuits instead of, like, you know, it's just terrible.
They make a real point of including that line at the end, though. You can tell, like, they know the audience is going to be real mad at Aunt Sarah.
And it doesn't
like,
help.
For Jeremy, it was not enough.
Stupid.
To redeem her.
There's a lot of villains. Oh, the rabid dogs that chase Lady.
Yeah, that the three like huge, scary looking rabid dogs that Tramp just dispatches by himself, which is like, I don't know if he knows like, you know, dog Kwon Do, but that was insane. who would win the Hunger Games?
I want Aunt Sarah to be in the Hunger Games so that she gets murdered brutally.
I mean, given that goes without saying.
Yeah. So I would totally volunteer hers.
I mean, like I said, Tramp was just beating up all these other dogs. That's seems true. Like he's like pretty good at taking care of
I
himself.
I don't want to see an animal in the Hunger Games. That would be sad, though.
Mm. Also, when we are in the zoo, we get a brief glimpse of some lions.
Lions, yes.
And it's really clear that Disney has not yet brought in live lions to have their animators practice on because these lions look terrible. Are there any queer-coded characters? It felt like this film was pretty... No? What? Who?
Are you joking?
What?
No, I actually thought it was pretty obvious to me, the queer-coded characters in this film.
Oh, okay. Please.
No, I'm kidding. There's no queer-coded characters in this film.
Damn it, Jeremy.
I'm sorry. There's nothing. Yeah, sorry. I don't know.
It's a
Unless
pretty...
the rat is a metaphor for people demonizing... LGBTQ plus people, and it's all, I don't know.
It seems it's a pretty, like, buttoned up, old-timey, you know, right side, wrong side of the tracks, binary kind of story, you know. Lady is an very, very late, I mean, she's fucking named Lady.
Right.
Tramp, you know, they're really playing up the gender, traditional gender roles there.
Yeah, and there's no major pariahs in this film, I would say.
And with most of the characters also.
Yeah.
I mean, the pound feels like there's like a little bit more craziness and freedom going on at the pound, but nothing sort of overt, I would say.
Yeah. Although I would argue that Pig could be a queer icon.
Mm-hmm.
You missed a category, Damien.
Oh. Maybe it was because unconsciously I knew how bad this movie is for this category, but go for it. What you're right. I have to do my job, which is to introduce Jeremy's Catwatch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Jeremy's Catwatch, where Jeremy counts down the cats featured in famous Disney films. This week, we're actually skipping Jeremy's Catwatch just because it's just not a good catwatch for this film. It's really bad representation for cats worldwide. Thank you for this time.
I really enjoyed how I did skip it, and then you reminded me of it in order to say that we were going to skip it.
Yeah, because you rudely skipped it.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
Thank you.
Are there any potential future adaptations of this film we'd like to see? There was a live
action. Well, there is one. There's apparently a live action. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
I haven't either.
I mean, are we...
I don't know. There's just...
I'm so exasperated.
It's not even a real dog. It's like, isn't it CGI?
It's CGI. I'm so exasperated with these live action films. I almost want to just pretend they don't exist, but
Speaking of, have you seen the new trailer for the new Pinocchio?
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I also just saw a teaser trailer for Anastasia.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Ooh. Wait, I really, really want to know what you think about Pinocchio.
The upcoming Pinocchio?
Yes.
Okay, slight digression, but this is what annoys me about these adaptations. What they've been so far and what it seems like based on the trailers I'm seeing is like they're basically recreations of the animated film, live action,
right?
Which to me is not like it's almost like you can't really call it an adaptation. It's almost like you're re-releasing this film, but you're copying all of the shots with live action. And that to me just doesn't land. I'm like, if you're gonna create a live action film, do something different with it, change the tone, you know, change the story maybe a little
make bit. Make Pinocchio gay, like we previously discussed.
Yeah, I know that there's been some that have...
Well, there's been three Pinocchios this year so far, by the way.
That's right. There's been a glut of Pinocchios.
My issue, like, besides that, Pinocchio just looks, like, animated. Like, he just looks like the...
Well, he is, I mean, right?
But he looks like the original animated Pinocchio just placed in this film.
Well, that's exactly like, what I'm saying.
It doesn't look...
It's like, you know, they're two different mediums. They're animation and live action. To think that anything that you put into this animated film is going to just translate into live action is silly. It's just not going to work. They're different mediums. And so that's my gripe with these adaptations. Anyway, based on what I was reflecting on, which is how great of a rom-com this is, I kind of feel like they could just do a human rom-com. Ooh. Following this story, like somebody from the wrong side of the track.
Well, they've kind of done that.
Well, I know. It's like a classic
story. Romeo
it's a classic story,
kind of thing.
But, you know, you add some musical elements, which is fun. Mm-hmm. You know, it's West in a particular... Jeremy's just like, right, West Side Story.
It's already
story,
been done, Damien. No.
Musical.
Tangled, even. I mean...
Okay, who are we going to each audition for real quick?
I'd be Peg. Clearly, I want to sing He's a Tramp.
Give us
I
your audition for Peg. Give us three.
He's a tramp. He's a scoundrel. Breaks a new heart every day.
Ow.
He's a tramp. But I love him. Yeah, even I've got it pretty bad. I messed up on the lyrics. But yeah, I can do a better director.
What is that, Doug? Boom, ba, boom, ruff.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Boom, ba, that's boom, just ruff. A great song. Yeah, no, I want to be Pig and be like, I've been around.
That was a steamy audition, Jeremy.
Thank you. I know who you would be, but I want to know who you think you should be.
Okay. This is my audition for Jock.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see that. Okay, go.
I misjudged him badly. We must get him back, man. I misjudged him badly.
A little more aggressive than the animated version, but
I
love it.
I decided to make the stereotype even more stereotyped and just be an angry Scotsman. Anyway, I got the role. That's what I like.
Thank you for
casting
us.
I think we both did.
I don't know why we weren't in the live action ones.
Yeah. What do we think is the message or moral of this film?
I don't know. This is
I know.
I don't know if there's meant to be one. I think I could definitely take one. I think walk in someone else's shoes or pause and see what's on, you know, the other side of the tracks. I just don't think if that's what the film intended. I don't know if, as I kind of touched on this previously, if they really explored that fully.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of what it's meant to be. I almost think it's like a first attempt at sort of like the Beauty and the Beast tale in a little bit, where it's like opposite ends have that attraction and then kind of coexist.
See, I think it's more actually about
or classes,
family and family bonds. Mm. Because I think the really crucial moment in the story in terms of like the message of the film is when they have that beautiful night together, Lady and Tramp, and they wake up on this hillside. Who knows what happened there during the night. But let's just say...
Well, we do know by Christmas.
By Christmas, there's some puppies running around. Anyway, they wake up and Tramp basically tries to open Lady's eyes. And they look down at the town and he's like, it's not just these fences and houses. There's a whole world beyond that. You know, we could have anything we want. Let's run away together. He essentially, you know, asks her to go away with him. And she just kind of goes like, yeah, no, but I have a baby at home. So what about the baby?
Yeah.
And right away, Tramp just gives up and is like, okay, I'll take you home. I can see that I can't convince you. But
you know, those are respectful boundaries, by the way.
It's true. It was nice how he very much respected her boundaries.
Yep.
And by the end of the film, he's moved in and taken up residence with Jim Deere and Darling.
Yeah, Darling Deere.
Jim Deere and Darling Deere. The Deers, as they're called.
Bambi.
Bam, Bambi. Oh, my God. It came back.
It's a comeback.
It came back. So I think, I mean, the arc that happens is kind of him coming around to this familial lifestyle and committing to it and how wonderful and happy, you know, domestic bliss is. Like that really runs throughout the whole opening sort of montage of the film is how beautiful it is to be, you know, Lady living with the Deers and her beautiful life with them.
And perhaps Lady learns that, you know, she wasn't being ignored. She wasn't being taken for granted. There was just someone new coming into the fold.
It's not really a message film, but I feel like I can get behind, you know, mm-hmm. the joys of domesticity. I feel like I'm a pretty domestic kind of dude. You know, I think that's a nice theme.
Mm-hmm. There's also the themes of friendship and a little bit with Trusty, you know, really saving, like, his friend's man, which is really cute.
Yeah.
Almost to his death.
I know. Good. Trusty, I mean, that's a trusty guy
what
to have
trusted
around.
Trusted friend.
What do we think Old Reliable used to say? Because we never do find out. At the end, when he finally gets to say,
back in my day,
without being interrupted, all the little puppies are like, no, you haven't mentioned Old Reliable. Tell us what he used to say. And then he's like, I don't quite recall what he used to say.
He probably said, sniff around for the answer, because you'll find it.
That's actually really good, Jeremy. That's amazing. I was like, there's no way we can come up with what it was, but that was good.
I don't know. Maybe.
That's, you know what? That's canon for me now. That's what I think Old Reliable used
Thank
to say.
Thank you. Guys, Damien's a really supportive friend.
No, Jeremy's just a genius. Let's move on to our power rankings.
Ooh.
Jeremy, do you want to tell us about your list?
Well, Damien doesn't like my list because I still have Dumbo and Alice in Wonderland tied for last place because it's just, I'm sorry, but I'm still going to do that until there's like a worse film because it's just hard for me to pick like a film that's just like the worst because I love them all.
It's okay. So, we did an impromptu therapy session and I now feel like I understand the psychology of it.
He gets the reason.
And I get it. So it's okay.
But I have decided that I am going to place, oh, this is so difficult. I'm going to place Lady and the Tramp between Pinocchio and Cinderella at spot number 5 for me. No. I'm going to put it above Pinocchio. I'm going to put it on, I think. Rick, I'm doing this again. Okay.
This is the hardest part of the cat
oh,
podcast.
Oh, gosh.
For
yeah,
Jeremy.
I'm going to put it at number 4. I think better comedic script. Yeah, okay. Number 4.
And
yeah.
What did you previously have at number 4?
Pinocchio.
Pinocchio. Okay, so yeah. Pinocchio's
going to
be...
It's replacing Pinocchio.
Pinocchio's going to become number 5. So this is our 8th one that we're doing. So give us your top 5, Jeremy, that you have as it goes now.
Okay, my top 5 are Bambi, Peter Pan, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, The Lady and the Tramp, and Pinocchio.
Okay, let me give you my top 5.
Oh, please do.
Number 1... Lady and the Tramp.
Whoa!
Yes.
Oh, shit. Wow.
And I actually feel pretty good about this decision, and I have to keep coming back to chalking it up to my love of just the romance and comedic elements
right.
of this film. I love a good rom-com, and this film is such a beautiful, shining example of that, that I feel like it's kind of unique within Disney for that reason.
Wow.
And it's just so charming. It has... the rousing moment at the end where I was almost moved to tears. Mm-hmm. It has comedic moments. It has some great music. I just think it's a winner. I'm putting it at number 1.
Wow. Winner, winner. Speaking about our dinner, I wanted to say that we actually had Mary's spaghetti and meatballs while watching this film. And I think that's very important to share. We were really going with the theme here.
Did we share a spaghetti noodle, though, and eat it till our mouths touched?
If we're talking about a euphemism, sure.
Okay. And we won't go into it further than that. So with this at number 1, my top 5 would be number 1, Lady and the Tramp. Number 2, Peter Pan. Number 3, Bambi. Number 4, Pinocchio. And number 5, Snow White. The one that started it all. It'll be very fun to see these lists and their filmography that we've covered continue to expand. But before we talk about that continuing journey and what
yes.
we're going to cover next, what are we personally taking away from this darling film?
I'm taking away a plate of spaghetti that I still have and I'm gonna have tomorrow for lunch. I took that away, which is nice. You know, these were just cute animals. I think my biggest takeaway is my hope for positive cat representation in future films. I'm very excited for the Aristocats at some point because it's literally a film about cats.
That is true.
You know, I am taking away a newfound appreciation for Peg and He's a Tramp. I think Obviously. Another takeaway that I have is that, you know, Damien will always admit to being attracted to animals in films. And I'm here for it, to be honest.
If you didn't catch on by now, it's becoming more and more clear.
Yeah.
All right, well.
I'll start it with Cleo.
Before we end, let us find out in real time, drum roll, what movie. I'm not sure what happened there.
He's lost it.
What movie we are going to be covering next. I'm leaning into it.
What are you leaning into?
I'm saying yes. First rule of improv, Jeremy.
Yes and.
Yes and, exactly.
Are we finding out now?
Yeah.
Okay. The next film is, wait for it, Sleeping Beauty.
Oh! So we're getting another princess, which, you know, is always fun. I am really excited for this one. This is one of the ones I think I've seen the least, for sure. And so I'm really excited to, like, see it as an adult and kind of form my opinions of it.
Yeah.
And until then, don't get caught and taken to the pound, whatever you do.
Well, I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Damien.
And this has been TJ Disney.
This is the night. Okay, bye-bye.
I was going to do harmony.
No, bye-bye. Okay.